The BBC presents My Music, a radio panel game devised by Edward J. Mason and Tony Schreier. And here's Steve Race to introduce the teams.
My Music, here again, a contest in musical knowledge and sometimes evasiveness in which Ian Wallace and Dennis Norden compete against David Franklin and Frank Muir. Here we are then in the heart of London with an opening round that has connections in each instance with this great city. For two marks, what is the connection? Ian Wallace, what has this to do with London?
I suspect that has something to do with somebody who in 1972 celebrated his centenary.
Well, he didn't.
Or he
didn't.
We did.
Yes,
it
we did.
Was celebrated.
Yes.
Yes. Vaughan Williams.
That's right.
And I know it's a Vaughan Williams symphony, and as you said, London, and he wrote a London symphony, I suppose that must be the connection.
Fabulous. Yes, you've got it. You forged your way to it, step
yes, that's
by
it.
Step. That's right. It was indeed part of Vaughan Williams' London Symphony, number two chronologically, but he called it his London Symphony. And Ian, you have two marks out of two. Dennis, what has this to do with London?
When we played our charade, we were like children posing, playing at games, acting out names, guessing the parts we played.
Nice, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the lady who's
Thickly.
Got a voice like two silk bedsheets rubbing together. it's a lady called Julie London.
Yes.
Who got a marvellous LP where she's just accompanied by a guitar, and her voice practically fades away.
Yes, really when she great. Sings Boy on a Dolphin, yes, it's like being...
It's the thing most singers
cream.
Are afraid of when their voice starts fading away.
Well, you're right, Julie London, so that's the London connection. There is another London connection, although you have your two marks. That tune was written in a London hotel by Henry Mancini when he was over here writing the music for the film Charade, or if you prefer, Charade. You've got two marks, anyway. David, again, what's the London connection?
Music used for a commercial in London.
Or,
yes.
It's the...
I'd rather have the or, I think.
It's the Ninth Symphony of Beethoven,
yes.
Isn't it?
And it's, yes, and its connection...
Which was, this is very snaky, it was commissioned by the Royal Philharmonic Society.
The London Philharmonic.
The London Philharmonic Society,
that's
yes.
Right, yes. Or to be absolutely precise, they commissioned a symphony and he was then writing his ninth, so that's the one they got.
Oh, yes, I just have this lying around, yes.
Yes, that's right. Two marks to you. That was a little bit of the Toscanini version we heard there at the very end. Frank, a well-known voice, but again, what's the London connection?
She looked at my hand and told me my lover was always true, and yet in my heart I knew, dear, somebody else was kissing you.
Is that a very noble number?
No.
Oh.
No, that would have been a good idea, but it isn't. No.
Well,
later, A later composer was writing later than Ray Noble's great hits. That's not really the London Connection. Although it will do.
But was there a hint in that elusive sentence?
No, it was just an elusive sentence.
Could you give a non-elusive sentence with a hint?
I'll have to tell you, the song was by a man who operated in London for a long time. Billy Reid wrote the song, The Gypsy. The singer was, you noticed the singer, perhaps? Oh, yes. Frank Sinatra. The point is, it was recorded in
Dorothy
London.
Dorothy Squires. The early Sinatra.
No, it was recorded in London. I was there when it was made. Right. It came from an LP called Great Songs from Great Britain. It was recorded by Frank Sinatra in London with accompaniment by Bob Farnan's orchestra. So I can't give you the marks.
He's Canadian, so he doesn't count.
I thought it might be instructive to find out how much you know about ancient instruments. Ian, how would you produce music from a shag bolt?
By gentle persuasion, I should think.
Shag bolt. Yes.
Try scratching it again.
How would you?
No, it's not itching at the moment.
I'm a
shag bolt. Would it be? Would it? It's an old instrument. Nothing like a sack butt or anything like
yes,
that.
Yes, it is. It is a sack butt.
Yes,
fact.
It's well, you'd blow it then.
Yes, it's a sack butt or trombone. A shag bolt was a form of sack butt or trombone. So you blow it. And perhaps if it was a trombone, you'd waggle the slide about at the same time. Well, you worked your way to that. I think really half a mark would do, Ian, don't you? There, especially as you're leading.
Yes, I'm not going to be booked for dissent.
Dennis, how do you play the stump?
Well, I take middle and leg. I would say that you hit it. With your head.
You
either bow it or hit it or suck it or blow it. That to me is the be-all and end-all of music.
I don't think you suck it. Only in my mouth.
You missed out the one thing you do with a stump.
Pluck it.
You strum it. With a plectrum or finger. It's the same as a cittern. Anyway, that you don't get a mark, I'm afraid, there. David, whittle and dub.
You what?
How would you produce music? How would you produce music from a whittle and dub?
I know this. You blow it, holding it with one hand, and you beat it with the other.
Yes, it's in fact the 18th century name for
A pipe and tabor.
Pipe and tabor is right. Yes, for a mark there. Frank, nakers.
Well, it's what a debutante takes a shower stark. I hope you don't clash them together.
We'd better call a halt, I think. Have a guess. How would you play?
It sounds plural. So I imagine it's a row of pipes.
No. Drums, actually. You would beat them. Drums they are. Nakers.
Oh, good.
I think it's perhaps rather sad that the era of the novelty piano solo now seems to be over. I can remember learning to play some of those old favourites. Well, let's see if I can remember them now. Let's see if I can play them, which is more to the point. Just a mark for you if you can give me the title from this little snatch. Ian, what's this?
Marigold.
Yes. You've got your mark. Do you know the composer?
Oh, he used to play at the Savoy,
yes,
didn't he? And I can't think of his...
You've got your mark.
It wasn't Carol Gibbons.
No,
it was the other one.
It was Billy Mayo.
Billy
Mayo's Marigold. You have the mark. Title again, please. This time, Dennis. See if you know this.
It's something like debutante.
Yes, very much like. Very much like, but not.
It's more kind of hitchy coo than that. It's more, you know...
It's very 1920s.
Busy girl.
Yes, it's a girl. You're so nearly there. It's called Flapperette. Flapperette is the title by somebody called Greer.
Sounds like an awful sort of...
We were very near,
food, isn't it?
Like a whistle.
Yes. David, see if you know what this is.
Kitten on the Keys by Zez Comfrey.
Yes. Zez David Franklin, and he gets a mark for it. Yes.
So it's by Debussy.
Pretty old joke, I'm sorry.
I love it every time you make it.
Yes, that's
right. I think we should put a preservation order on that one. Yes.
Let's see how Frank gets on with his novelty piano solo, this one.
Hors d'oeuvre.
Yes, by a gentleman called David Comer. You got your mark. Very good. Hors d'oeuvre. From time to time, the words of a song make mention of another song, either in the title or somewhere perhaps within the chorus. I've made myself a list of half a dozen here, though there must be many more. Let's see if each of you can think of an example. A song that mentions another song. I'll give you an example. When you played the organ and I sang the Rosary. Good night, Frank Muir. The Rosary being a song mentioned within that song title. So, Ian, a song within a song. Can you think of one?
If you want to hear the Swanee River played in ragtime,
come on along. That's good. In Alexander's Ragtime Band. Yes, jolly good for a mark. Dennis, have you got one yet?
Moonlight Bay.
Oh, what's that?
We could hear the water singing, they seem to say, you have stolen my heart, so don't go away. When we sang love's old sweet song on Moonlight Bay.
I never thought of that. Very good, yes. Yeah, jolly good. David, have you come up with one?
The only thing that immediately offers itself is the last scene of Don Giovanni, in which Mozart has the orchestra players snatch from the first act of the end of the first act of Figaro, and on which Leporello comments, that's something we've heard a bit too much. He also quotes two other themes from two other operas, I Due Litiganti and another piece called Così Rara.
Which will do nicely. That's the one Frank was thinking of.
Yes.
Do nicely.
I got it wrong. Così Rara. I beg your pardon.
Yes, I thought. I wondered for a moment.
Frank, have you got one?
Maybe it's because I'm a Londoner. Because you came to me.
I'm not accepting that for a second.
Hang on.
There's a little known opera, but...
Oh, yes.
There's also in Noel Coward's Nina from Argentina.
Yes.
There's... So don't let them begin the beginning. And then Uncle Porter too. And the altar too.
Don't let them begin the beginning. I can't remember it myself now. And in language, something that she cursed the man who taught her to, she cursed Cole Porter too. You're right.
That's with composer too, bonus.
The verse of Tenement Symphony.
Yes, that's one of the ones I dotted down here.
How about, has anybody here seen Kelly?
No, that
he's as bad as old Antonio, which is a reference to Antonio. Yeah.
The ones I had were, I dotted down that verse. Schubert wrote a symphony, too bad he didn't finish it, from Tenement Symphony. I'd like to meet the guy who wrote the Stein song, was one of them. There's also, of course, the gang that sang Heart of My Heart.
Oh, yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
There's in I Won't Dance, Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers, especially when you do the Continental... And what was the other one I had? Oh, indirectly, that mesmerising Mendelssohn tune, which was an Irving Berlin thing. Looking at the score and leading at the moment by half a mark, Ian Wallace and Dennis North. Grand Opera. This concerns a very famous opera. You'll know which one, I think, from the first bar or two of this aria.
Questo quella per me pari sono, ma guardare per intorno, d'intorno mi vedo. Del mio cuore, l'impero non c'è, dove natura che ha l'altra beltà.
Ian, your question, which opera and who is the character singing there?
Mark. The opera is Rigoletto.
Thank you.
By Giuseppe Verdi. And the character is the Duke of Mantua. The
lovely,
wicked Duke of Mantua.
Lovely marks, yes, thank you. Dennis, Dennis, the story of Rigoletto, where did it come from? A high-born gentleman causes himself to laugh.
A high-born gentleman causes himself to laugh.
Oh. Le roi s'amuse.
Die.
Le roi s'amuse. I don't know, but the film starred Victor Francon. The film called Le roi s'amuse.
It's a friend, yes, well, Fillon.
Victor Hugo.
Yes, Le roi s'amuse by Victor Hugo. The origin of the story. David, listen to another aria and a question.
Allow me to say in parenthesis, before you tell me your question, that yes, this character is supposed to be a teenage girl in the first flush of excitement of first love. But the music that Verdi's written for her is so sophisticated, and some of the ladies who sing it have been so experienced
in all registers,
that I sometimes get the feeling that they're excited young teenagers who've nevertheless have knocked about a bit. What was your question?
Ah. I'm glad you asked me that. Well, that, as you know, was Caro Nome, dear name. Question, what name is she singing about and what is her name, Mark Each?
Well, her name is Gilda.
Thank you.
And the chap she's met is really the Duke of Mantua, but he's posing under the name of Walter Maldet, a young student.
And that's the dear name. Yes, 2 marks to you. Frank, I hate to spoil it for you by giving away the ending of this show, but this is the last line of the whole opera. The heroine is dying, and Rigoletto sings... As I said, the heroine is dying. Why does he raise his voice like that at such a tender moment?
Because he's cursing her.
No, no, he is.
Oh, you said
no,
that.
No.
He's cursing. What he's referring back to the first act when somebody cursed him.
You were ill-prompted there.
Yes, the practical reason why he's got to raise his voice is because the orchestra's playing so loud.
The reason he raises his voice, Steve. Also, a sudden realization came
yes,
over him, overwhelmed.
David, put you straight on that. He's calling out that by her death, the curse of the Count Monteroni has been fulfilled, and you get your marks for that.
David, did you ever play the part of Sparrow Fucile, the murderer?
Many, many times.
Mm. Because in that case, you will probably know the famous case in performance of this opera in Italy, where the soprano who played the part of Gilda was a very, very big girl. She really was very, very big indeed. And there comes this moment when she is murdered and is put into the sack and carried off the stage by Sparrow Fucile. And it was quite impracticable, this lady. She was a beautiful and wonderful singer, but she did tip the scale fairly high. And so four performances when she appeared, It was arranged with great ingenuity that Sparrow Fucile, the hired assassin, would have three brothers. And in some places where she did it, even the strength of the four of them combined was not enough. And in those cases, you saw two rather fat legs coming out of the sack, twinkling along, walking in between as well. But such was her voice that the audience accepted this entirely and cheered her to the echo for her beautiful singing.
By a strange coincidence, a Gilda with whom I sang is, I think, in the house tonight as a guest of mine. She, too, was, I know she won't mind my saying, bigger than the average Gilda. And at the dress rehearsal, she obediently climbed into her sack, and I had to pull it across the stage. I couldn't shift her. And I said, what the hell am I going to do? And Silveri, the Italian baritone who was singing Rigoletto, said, I fix, and called, went down to the footlights and called out into the house and said, taxi!
Very larky, isn't it?
But this was only a dress rehearsal. There was no audience there.
Here comes the last round with some singing from each of you. Notably at the end from Ian, of course. But this week I'm going to join you. I'm going to sing the first line myself with my voice. And for two marks...
Is that a good thing?
Your voice?
Yes. In your face?
Yes, yes. I'm going to open my mouth and push, as they used to say in the old days.
Shoot the glottis.
Yes. I'm going to sing the first line, and for two marks, will you please carry on, complete with words. And in a moment, you'll know why I'm singing. Right. Dennis Norton, you ready? I'll sing first, then you join in. When the deep...
purple falls over sleepy garden walls and the...
dawn.
Thank you.
Too nicely from Deep Purple. Two marks to you. David.
My mama done told me...
Could I have a lower key?
My mama done told me...
when I was in me pants...
You'll be sorry. Go on.
Mama done told me... boy.
No, that's it,
son.
You get your two marks as well. Frank, they say there's a troop ship. Don't send me up.
To match your voice. There's many airman just finishing his time. There's many a mug signing on. You'll get no promotion this side of the ocean, so cheer up, my lad, bless the Lord.
That's more like it. Bless
the Lord. The long and the short and...
Yes. I'm sorry, that was your thing.
Thank you very much, audience. Two marks. Ian, yours is part of the middle bit of a song. Let me give myself a chord here. Sorry, I cried, but I just felt that way.
And now that you've gone, dear, this letter I pen, my heart travels with you till we meet again. Keep smiling, my darling, and one day we'll spend a lifetime as sweet as that lovely weekend.
Thank you, Ian. And so we end another edition of My Music with two marks to Ian. Should you be mathematically inclined, you might like to know that it proved to be a victory by half a mark for Ian Wallace and Dennis Norton. Goodbye.
Taking part in My Music were David Franklin, Frank Muir, Dennis Norden, and Ian Wallace. The questions were compiled by our chairman, Steve Race, and the program was produced for the BBC by Tony Schreier.